Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty. Reporting on a Wednesday night for early delivery on our Thursday show. That's right. Kind of getting back in the groove after those weeks of vacation and, you know, kind of altering our schedule a little bit. We're going to see if we can get back on schedule. However, I will let you know. I don't think it'll affect the upcoming military trip that we have that you'll hear us talk about in the next couple weeks because we're heading to Virginia. In a couple weeks. So, now that I think about it, it won't affect that. Never mind that. But we are excited to tell you about it. And we're excited to talk about fights going on this weekend. Marvin Vettori and Paulo Costa is your main event. It looks like it's still a main event, but there has been some drama on Fight Week. We'll talk about that. Got some news regarding Ray Borg, who is as cursed as any athlete out there. Boy, the last 5 years have been rough on Ray Borg and his family. Surprise title booking with Kyoji Horiguchi next for Sergio Pettis. We'll talk about that. Conor McGregor did it again. Just kidding. No, he didn't do nothing this time. I mean, maybe there's a little bit more clarity on his situation. But hey, you know what? We are going to talk to a legend in Rich Franklin. So that should be fun. We always have a good time with Ace, and we always cover a lot. So buckle up, Junkie Nation. Got a lot to talk about here on a Junkie Radio podcast. Show number 3203 coming your way, October 21st. Goes, what did you think about show number 3200 in terms of the round number that it was?
It was cool. I got a couple messages from people that was really nice. It's been a really, really long journey, man. I can't believe that we've done this many. And, I guess I miss doing the daily, but at the same time, I kind of love some of the new stuff that's come around. But it's been a fun ride.
Yeah. Sometimes we squeeze in these little shout outs and blurbs about the show towards the end and we really don't, you know, unpack it, I guess, but we acknowledged it and, you know, we're not back to where we want to be. I can say that. I know we want to go back on live, on video, along with still delivering the podcast, of course. That's why we do it, you know, 12 hours earlier so that the UK, the Oceania audience, you know, and other parts of the world too, they can get their hands on it, you know, at an appropriate time. So like right now, for example, it's 9 p.m. Pacific time on Wednesday. And if I'm not mistaken, it's like 2 p.m. in Tokyo, Japan on Thursday. So somebody could be at work and if we get this up in time, maybe somebody could catch it on their drive home or, when I say Oceania, I also mean, you know, Australia and New Zealand. I believe they're even a little bit further ahead of Japan. So for them, you know, maybe it'll be ready for them when they wake up even the next day. But it just gives you more time, especially going into the weekend. So the UK audience right now, 8 hours ahead for them would be, it's 5 a.m. So they may have it in time for them to catch, you know, on their lunch hour while they're working. Anyway, I did want to give one shout out, Goes. This is a little bit late here, but got very nice words from Peso Neto via Instagram. He had seen me on the Joey Diaz podcast, and he just said he was entertained and keep doing what you're doing. He loves the show, and I thanked him, and he reiterated that he really enjoys MMA Junkie and our show and was just very, very nice. So shout out to Peso Neto on Instagram. And now let's get this show started. Goes, what do you think about Vettori and Costa? You know, usually Vittori's the one sticking his foot in his mouth, you know, on fight week. I guess he kind of did last week, you know, the way he was breaking down his fight versus Israel Adesanya. But now that that's gone, he's got this fight coming up. I really favor Marvin to win the fight. Even before I found out that as of this afternoon, I guess Paulo Costa was 211 for a fight that he's supposed to weigh in at 186. He's already kind of throwing in the towel, and they went back and forth a little bit, but I caught just a few minutes before we started this podcast an interview with ESPN MMA where both guys seem to have kind of agreed on 195. What do you think of this whole shit show going on?
I think even that's going to be tough for him to make. I picked Paulo Costa to win the fight just because I think his style will probably give Marvin Vettori some problems. I don't know that Marvin can really pressure a guy like that. It's very dangerous. But now looking at what Paulo Costa's showing up, I don't know where his head is. I mean, granted, even 195, that looks like it's going to be tough. He looks enormous, dude. So for him to even get to that, I'm kind of doubting that'll even happen. But Marvin, like him or not, I mean, that kid's got balls, dude. He'll fight anyone, anytime, any place. A lot of people, I think, would have ran from a situation like this. And the fact that he's still willing to take the fight is pretty gutsy.
He looked pretty calm and relaxed in that interview, almost like he knew he was in control. He was now the A side. And, you know, he's basically going to make some money off this negotiation from Paulo Costa. So it's going to cost Paulo Costa some money, even if he gets the desired weight of 195, which, like you said, could be cutting it close. You know, it's already Wednesday. Weigh-ins are on Friday morning. You know, I've heard of people losing 20 pounds on fight week, but you hear more of that about like, hey, when I landed Tuesday morning or when I got there at the beginning of the week, and now we're midweek. Plus, there's a lot of stress involved. Your body shuts down a lot when it goes through these types of stresses. All these headlines. Imagine the letdown. Imagine what the matchmakers and UFC president Dana White are thinking. Like, seriously, you're the guy who fought or barely fought against Israel Adesanya. I mean, that was, you know how rare it is to have a title fight where the number one and the number two meet up and they're both undefeated and, you know, two great sporting countries, New Zealand/Nigeria versus Brazil. Like, it had so many things that I was excited about, and Costa just didn't, you know, he had a mental block. And so now it's taken him so long to finally dust himself off and get here. And then this debacle, you know? So that said, of course, he's a great athlete. I'm sure he can punch hard for whatever time he has. But goes, I think Vettori and the pressure that he is probably going to put on Costa, I see Costa having maybe 5 minutes to win this fight. And then after that, I think Vittori's going to take over. And I think he may even get a finish. I don't know. You know, Costa's a tough guy. And Vettori just seems to be content with kind of beating you up over time. You know, he's not a one hitter quitter, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But I think he's going to smell blood, and I think he's going to go for it. Again, Costa, I think, will be tough, but for a small amount of time. I just think he really, really blew an opportunity. Now, remember, we discussed this. He was either on a spinning back click, Triple G. You know, we talk so much with so many outlets and on social media, but I was asked, I think it was a spinning back click, who has the better chance to get back to a title shot? Well, it's going to be tough for Vettori because he's 0-2 against the champ. He's 0-1 in title fights, but he's 0-2 against him. He did have one split decision, but that was the rallying cry for why you should fight him again. Hey, one judge thought I won, you know? We had the fight. Izzy won 50-45 across the board. It wasn't a very exciting fight. But Costa, you know, he had the little, I drank two bottles of wine. I probably had personal things going on, but I've still got a shiny record. I'm still a good-looking guy with abs. Get me back in there. I just beat Vettori, you know. Now I'm not even sure if he can get past Vettori, and that's why I'm saying he really may have blown a big chance. Let's not forget, Cannonier, Brunson, they're streaking, especially Brunson. You know what I mean? These guys, those guys are in prime position. And let's also not forget that if Whitaker beats Adesanya, and they're not fighting until February, by the way, it's still October, they would only be 1-1. So think about this setback. I'm not kidding when I tell people these setbacks can be costly, man, 18 months to 2 years.
Well, also don't forget, he's probably not one of Dana's favorite fighters.
Exactly. Right?
They've had a little bit of a history too. I'm sure they're not too happy about this now. So I think that road is going to be a little longer for Paulo Costa.
Paulo Costa needs a big, big win. All will not be forgotten. He will not get a bonus, but I think it can help repair him, especially if he says something in a post-fight speech along the lines of, that's my bad. No excuses. I'm glad I beat Vettori. I'm embarrassed about what happened. I'm going to come back stronger and fucking walk out of that octagon as quick as you can. You know what I mean? No flight, no blame, no blaming it on, you know, anything else. I almost said periods, but of course, you know, people twist people's words. So, you can't blame it on anything. You know, the flight, the pandemic. You just have to say it was me. That's my bad. I'm glad I got the win over a tough opponent. And I can't wait for my next assignment. And that's that, you know, and get the hell out. And maybe you can start the reparations. But, as soon as I saw that headline, I was like, oh, man, it's going to be rough for him.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Borg, what a situation he's in. He did get COVID, and that's why he won't be fighting at UAE Warriors. He had a title fight, goes. And, you know, Ray Borg's had a lot of personal problems, especially with the health of his son. Him and his family have overcome that, but the weight cuts that went bad in the UFC, you know, the problems that he had with the UFC, I think a lot of times he had withdrawals that didn't have anything to do with family, and so eventually it led to him getting cut, and now he says, my heart breaks to have to post this, but unfortunately I've tested positive for COVID-19, will not be able to compete at UAE Warriors 24. It didn't seem like he had... it's not anything like in terms of hospitalization or anything, but it was affected. He said he was extremely sick the week before. He wasn't even able to get out of his own bed, but it does also sound like he is on the mend, and he just won't be able to fight in time. And, you know, I could have sworn I saw a GoFundMe for this guy a while back as well. And you can't fight. You also don't earn. You know what I mean? So we had Ray on a lot when we were able to book him directly. And he came to the studio. And I really became a Ray Borg fan. I just love his style of fighting. Tough kid out of Mexico who wrestles. He's into the archery. Nice guy. Loves his wife. Everything that happened with his son, man. I was really, really rooting for him to maybe someday get back in the UFC, because all that came to him really, really early in his career. He was only mid-20s when he got cut. So I thought, we'll see that guy again, you know, like kind of almost like the Brandon Moreno story, but that's going to be delayed too.
Yeah, and what sucks is apparently the way he's describing it is it's been kind of a bad one, you know, with lasting effects. So who knows how far that's going to put him back. But all I want to do is just see the kid come back and fight and make some money, you know, for his family.
Mm-hmm. The NAC, the Nevada State Athletic Commission, has suspended Ryan Benoit for 9 months after testing positive for a sleep apnea drug. So they had a commission hearing yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. And what happened was Benoit had tested positive. It was a urine sample that they collected after his UFC on ESPN 27 fight, where he lost to Zaruk Adchev on July 31st. So he was flagged for modafinil, and it's more commonly known as Provigil. It's commonly prescribed for sleep apnea. So not only will he face about $3,500 in fines and legal fees, he will not be eligible to return until April 1st of 2022. Now, it's not a two-year suspension. It seems like there was good communication. It doesn't seem like he did anything to enhance his performance, but right now he's out of the UFC, and most commissions will still honor this. Luckily, it's retroactive to July 31st, but again, he can't fight till April 1st. So rough run there for Ryan Benoit. But again, at least it's not the two-year variety. Those ones really stink.
I don't understand this one in particular, though, because it's one that's not enhancing your performance. So doesn't it just come down to him disclosing it? Like, is this just one of those where you go, is the fighter lazy? Like, did he just not make the effort here?
It doesn't appear so.
Hmm.
9 months isn't too bad. And see, here's the thing. Benoit hasn't fought a lot in the last 5 years. Lots of injuries. And now he's cut. So his better paydays may be behind him unless he can get back. I enjoy watching him as a fighter. I don't hate the kid. He's been in our studio. You know, I like him. But it's let me start over. So 9 months isn't the end of the world. A lot of fighters take time in between fights. But still, you never know what opportunities, you know, he may have missed. Like, what if, for example, he was going to get a second chance through Dana White Contender Series? Well, that's almost over. We only have a few more weeks of that. And, you know, would he make the cut for Bellator, for example? I mean, I know he's only a flyweight / bantamweight, but let's just say they needed a featherweight. He may not be able to make it there. I mean, you miss these windows to possibly, you know, get with another organization. That's the part that hurts.
Yeah, for sure.
Kevin Lee, Nevada State Athletic Commission, has also come down on him. This is for ADHD. He had a positive drug test, and he's suspended for the use of adult ADHD. Now, Kevin has been really, really opening up on social media. He had a nice Facebook post. He started talking a little bit about how he's quit drinking alcohol because he was drinking a lot of alcohol and other medications. But he says, hey, I'm putting it all behind him. I'm going to grow stronger from this. But he does have to, you know, deal with the sanctions that are going to come down from USADA because he is on the UFC roster. Now, he did not disclose his dosage to the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Goes, that's kind of the problem there. There was a lack of communication. And I don't think he's going to get the two-year variety, but he did test over the limit that's allowed by the Nevada State Athletic Commission in his most recent fight, and that's why you won't be seeing Kevin Lee for a while. Now, remember, this is on the heels of two knee surgeries, so he also hasn't been fighting a lot, you know? It's also a sensitive subject because of mental health and him being so open about it. But what he could have done was he could have applied for a therapeutic use exemption. And I think if he would have communicated that, he would have been okay. So that's why this isn't going to be like, ooh, you little sneaky devil type thing. But still, professional athlete has to be on top of all this. You know what I mean? This one's going to hurt him a little bit.
Yeah, this is going to be a little rough stretch, I think, in his life because he's not going to be able to make money. And he's going to have to figure out how to balance his mental health, you know, because his solution right now is flushing his pills. And so that's fine and dandy, but you got to figure out how you're going to be able to function properly this way. And hopefully that he has a good support system around him to help him figure that out, because that can be rough. That does a number on people.
Exactly. We know Kevin pretty good. You know, I miss the Motown Phenom goes. They used to come to the studio, show up about 10 minutes early. He'd always make himself a nice coffee. He felt at home in our studio, and we would just tackle so many subjects. But the last couple times I've seen him at Extreme Couture, he's just really private. And he's, you know, I know the losses hurt him, you know. He relocated his camps to Montreal. He still lives in Las Vegas. He doesn't seem as jovial and as friendly as he used to be. That said, he's not mean mugging us or mean mugging me or anything like that. But it was such a different Kevin Lee, who was just enjoying life so much. You know, I think 23 years old was when we first met him, and he had that 25 to life hashtag going on or whatever. And now he's getting in his later 20s. He still has time to right the ship. But, you know, there's just been so many things, man, between him switching weight classes, him missing weight, and then him losing some key fights. You know, he's just not where he was, where he thought he would be. If you think about it, he had that great first round against Tony Ferguson. He almost became the UFC interim lightweight champion at one point, you know. And so right now he's got a long road back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about what's going on in his head and then what's going on with his body, right, like the injuries that he's had to go through, you know, losing his head coach, for going from camp to camp. There's just so much, man. And he's super, super talented. I really hope he could put it together, because like whenever we talk about football, right? If you see Kevin Lee come up on the schedule, it's not an easy game. You know, it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you can get your ass on the ground, man. That guy's got a great submission game. He kicked freaking Gregor Gillespie's head off a few years ago. Well, one of the most vicious KOs still. I still stand by that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, he outstruck, I think, Edson Barbosa. He's an exciting fighter, you know, and he used to talk a good game. I hope he can get back to having fun. And maybe this time will allow him to, you know, sort out some things. But, yeah, I forgot. That's a good point, goes about Robert Fallis, his ex-coach. That was something that a few fighters took very, very difficult. Brian Caraway, Misha Tate, Kevin Lee. So, to name a few, I wish him the best of luck. But at least he's taking it head on. He's been very open on social media. Good luck to the Motown phenom. All right, Rich Franklin's coming up shortly. Let's talk about a few other things here. Goes Pettis versus Horiguchi. I see this headline, right? Remember a few months ago that Magomedov guy had fought Rafion Stotts. And remember we were making a big deal, 16-1 against 18-1. Holy cow, this is going to be, you know, a clear number one contender, despite the fact that they're teammates, you know, Pettis and Stotts. And Stotts won the fight. But now Kyoji Horiguchi's getting it. Now, here's what baffles me. Horiguchi's had a nice little run, all right? But you only have to go back two fights to see that there's a loss. And Stotts has won 10 in a row. Stotts even has a better overall record. He hasn't won a belt like Horiguchi has. He's a former Bellator champion. Remember, he defeated Darian Caldwell in a home and away series with Bellator and Ryzen, Horiguchi representing Ryzen. But then he also vacated the belt on his own. Now, that said, I thought, I wonder what Stotts thinks of all this goes. And I kind of queued it up. I'm just going to play it, and I hope this works. But he's not taking it that bad. Listen up.
Yeah. I just wanted to address the people about the title fight in Bellator. Sergio Pettis, my boy, is fighting Horiguchi. I forgot his first name. Kyoji Horiguchi. And Bellator informed me that I'm next in line for the belt. But they're fighting next. And how do I feel about that? I feel it's, you know, I feel like it's the right move because Sergio is obviously the champion. And Horiguchi, like, willingly gave up the belt because he knew he was going to be out for so long. So he never lost the belt. So, like, truly never lost the belt.
I mean, if he's good with it, what can you do? But, boy, that is a team player, a gentleman. I was just baffled, you know. I don't know. I thought he was clearly next.
It was I don't know if that's the right move for Bellator. It might be the right move for his relationship with him and Sergio Pettis, for both of them, for the gym. But I don't know if it's the right move for Bellator.
In the last 3 years, goes, Horiguchi is 4-1. In his last two fights, he's 1-1 because he split with Kai Asakura. In one of those fights, he got finished. And then in the next fight, he finished Asakura. Stotts has just been, like I said, he hasn't lost in 9 fights, I think, in a row is where he's at. It, to me, maybe, I guess, if Stotts is okay with it, why spend any more time on it? But I just thought, man, that's not Horiguchi's that's not his shot, in my opinion. He vacated the belt? Okay, well, you're a nice guy then, you know what I mean? And but in the meantime, what does that have to do with Stotts? That's what I'd be saying. If I was Stotts, I'd be saying, well, what's that got to do with me? You know, like, you vacated it. All right, cool. You vacated it for a reason. I think it had to do with injury or something like that. And the division did get to go on, but what's that got to do with Stotts?
Mm-hmm. No, I hear you.
Anyway, now that fight is going to take place in Bellator 272, Friday, December 3rd. So it's literally 6 weeks away. Is it me, or are some of these fights getting made rather, like, close to their event? Like, Poirier and Oliveira probably had a good idea that they'd be fighting, but it only got announced like 2-3 weeks ago. But it was definitely around that 2-month mark. there's been so many times where the UFC will tell us, for example, we'll use today's date. Today's October 20th. And then they'll say something like, Israel Adesanya versus Robert Whittaker, April 20th. And you're like, oh, man, great fight. It's too bad it's 6 months away, but at least I know the date. I know the event. I know the location. And then you just put it off to the side, and then time takes over, and eventually you get to it. But some of these fights that Bellator and the UFC come up with where they're like, yeah, these two cats in 6 weeks, in 4 weeks, I'm like, wow.
I think they know about it earlier. I think what they do is they tell them, hey, there's a good chance this is happening, and that takes care of for about a week or two. And then they make the announcement, and then I think it takes about a week or two for people to find out. So I think I can't remember who it was. It was an interview we did not too long ago, but that person kind of admitted, like, man, I knew the whole time or something like that.
Yeah. Well, like I say, if Stotts is over it, then I'm over it. But that's cool. This will be the younger Pettis' first title defense. And it's a good one. That's a good division for them. That division right there at Bellator should be the next Grand Prix. When you throw in Magomedov, Stotts, Pettis, Kyoji, you know, I'm glad he's back. Caldwell, if he wants to come back to 135, you know, I don't know. You know, they have some killers there that they can, you know, at least come up with eight and get the ball rolling on a Grand Prix. Grand Prix put a nice spotlight on the division. They kind of, it's like a nice little kickoff, you know. It's when you tell the whole world, hey, look, we got a stable here. We got a division, and we're going to keep growing. So I hope to see one of them, one of those for them soon.
Right.
All right. We'll come back in a little bit and finish up with the card coming up this Saturday. Again, Vettori versus Costa is still on the docket, probably now at 195, and we'll talk a little bit more about that and the rest of the card when we come back. But right now, it's time to talk to former UFC middleweight champion Rich Franklin, now with ONE FC. Let's hook up, guys. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. We got a legend here with us. It's former UFC middleweight champion Rich Franklin, who's currently a vice president for ONE Championship. Welcome back, Ace. How you doing?
What's going on, man? It's good to be back on the show. I'm good, man. I'm good.
Good to have you. Looks like you've been stateside, and it looks like you've been jacking some weights and kind of doing some traveling. Are you back now permanently, or was this just kind of like an extended stay?
I'm not sure yet. I'm you know, obviously still working for ONE. I came back with the whole situation with COVID and everything that's going on. I've been working for ONE for the last 8 years. I've been working for ONE based in Singapore for the last 4 years, but I've also had, well, four and a half, but I've had the ability to travel back and forth. Now, within the current situation, it makes travel really difficult. I mean, particularly for us, because Singapore, I live in Cincinnati. The geographical, like the size of Singapore from geography is about the same size as Cincinnati with the 275 loop, like the highway loop that we have around it. So geographically, it's not a large country. And when you talk about borders and stuff like that, like the traveling in and out right now, particularly on that side of the world, where you have these high population densities in places like Bangkok and Manila and so forth, travel's really tricky and somewhat restricted at this point in time. So getting to and from Singapore back to the U.S. was quite difficult for me. So I initially came back to the U.S. just, you know, for personal reasons. I have land here, property, my house that I live in, and things I needed to take care of. But at the same time, because ONE Championship did that string of shows on back in April on TNT, and that was our first foray into the U.S. market, truly. Now we're looking at actually bringing shows to U.S. soil because we had broadcasted those events from Singapore.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. And it sounds like you're kind of leaving the door open that you can go back. But it also sounds like you've been doing some work here. You know, over the summer, we saw ONE Championship get approved in Colorado. And then I was following you on social media. You're getting a lot of tread on them feet, a lot of walking going around. You visited a lot of MMA gyms. Can you tell us a little bit about the walk first, and then we'll migrate over to MMA. Overcomer team. What was going on with that?
Yeah, I didn't realize what you're referring to at first. So yeah, on my socials, So the Overcomer team, this local guy, his name's Cody O'Connor. He comes to me. He had Ewing sarcoma cancer when he was 14 years old. He's 25 now. It took him a little over 6 years to battle through this cancer. And he had a cyst in his leg that they end up having to remove. And when they remove that, they end up having to take a bone out of his leg, restructured his entire ankle. He's got one ankle that looks like a normal ankle, and the other one is about the size of like his wrist. And so he was told he'd never walk normally again. I mean, he could walk, you know, to and from the grocery store to get in and out of a car. But like, for example, to spend an entire day at a zoo or something like that, he would never be able to walk normally. He'd be in braces or with supports, you know, whatever. And so he was determined at that point in time to walk. He was like, you know what? I'm going to prove everybody wrong. I want to walk across the country. He had actually trained himself and was able to walk almost from our hometown here in Cincinnati to downtown, walked almost the distance of a marathon. And then during the quarantine and lockdowns and COVID, he was hiking at a park off pavement and ended up twisting his ankle really bad and setting back. So he came to me and he said, Rich, if there's anybody that can get me back on track faster, it's you. And I want to walk across the entire country. And I was like, what? So I said, yeah, man, I'll help you out. And then when I saw his gait when he actually walked, which I posted a video of on my Instagram, and you can see how much he favors his right leg from that bone being removed. I mean, they removed the fibula, the complete bone. And so when I saw that walk, I was like, wow, this is going to be much tougher than I thought it was. But he started that walk back June 16th in Times Square, and he's now passing through Kansas. He was back in Cincinnati today. They dropped a GPS location, left off, came back to Cincinnati for some business that he had to do for some charitable stuff for the Overcomer team. And now he's headed back to Kansas today. So I'm actually here in like a week and a half or 2 weeks. I'm going to meet him out in Kansas. And we're going to end up going to a Kansas City Chiefs, New York Giants game on the 1st of November. So that'll be pretty cool.
Man, you guys are gangsters. I mean, seriously, from New York to Kansas, I wouldn't even want to drive that far.
Hold on. Don't say you guys are gangsters. Like, he's a gangster. I walked one day with him, and this kid is missing a bone in his leg, and we were walking. And I posted a video of us walking on my Instagram, and I was literally, like, breathing heavy. I'm like, dude, do you maintain this pace all day? He's actually, this is my slow pace. And we were walking up this hill. Of course, this was in Cincinnati, and we chose, like, I think the hottest day in July or whenever it was. It was 100 plus degrees that day, but man, I mean, he sets a pace and he's on it. And so that guy's gangster. I'm complaining about having to drive like eight and a half, 9 hours out to Kansas City to meet up with him. And he's walked all the way across the country. So I've spent maybe just a couple random days walking with him. But yeah, man, it's a really, really, really cool story. And he's raising money. You can go to overcomerteam.com or you can check out, I don't know what his exact Instagram handle is, but it's like Overcomer Team. But he's raising money for families that are affected by cancer, because when he was battling cancer when he was a teenager, it financially pretty much crumbled his family. Not just the medical bills themselves, but like his parents weren't able to work. People had to go to the hospital with him while he was doing chemo. And there's a lot of stuff that comes into fighting cancer that people don't realize. And so the fund that we have set up is designed to actually help financially families. And so through this walk so far, I think he's helped two, maybe three families with complete expenses and stuff like that. So it's, the kid's a stud, man. He's a good guy too. It's just like, he's on a mission right now. So, and he's sitting there talking like, all right, what bigger things can we do next year? I'm like, bro, get through this walk. Let's just get to Cali first. And then let's discuss that.
That's super motivating and incredible that a professional athlete like you were holding him up. I guess if you weren't along for the ride, maybe you'd already be in Colorado instead of Kansas. Just kidding.
I think if I went along for the ride, he'd probably be like somewhere in New Jersey right now. Like if I was walking with him, that's how slow I'd be walking.
Yeah. But speaking of Colorado, I was just throwing the joke into segue into what happened in Colorado in the summer. One championship got your rule set approved for, you know, the engagement with down opponents, whether it be kicks or knees. And I wanted to see if you wanted to talk about it, because obviously you guys are laying the foundation for going to Colorado. And I know you got six events still planned for the rest of this year, but can you give us a forecast of how important Colorado will be to one championship.
Yeah, Colorado's been really important for us, actually, and we've been able to basically use that as a building block. I've gone to several other athletic commissions at this point in time, and believe it or not, I have approval in several states at this point. And so, yeah, our schedule next year, like I mentioned earlier, we opened up on TNT in April this year. We had a really good run. And the interesting thing about our rules is that it's amazing how many avid mixed martial arts fans there were watching one championship at the time when Adriana Marias defeated Demetrius Johnson and was surprised when Demetrius got kneed when he was on the ground. Because we say it at every broadcast, and DJ had actually been pretty outspoken about the fact that he was supportive and in favor of that particular rule per se. But, you know, with the rule set comes not just the obvious things that people see is like, oh, you can knee a downed opponent to the head. Like, you know, in the U.S. audience isn't used to seeing that, but there are a lot of other things that come with our rule set. For example, we do like fight week CT scans, which I think we're probably the only major organization in the world that actually does that. All organizations require like head scans, MRIs or CTs or whatever during your medicals, and which we require as well. But we also get our athletes, it's built into their fight week schedules, is that they go back to the hospital during fight week and get CT scanned to make sure that something didn't happen in the approaching weeks of the fight. We also have our hydration protocols, which I'm a huge fan of, and I can get into that both on a professional level of me working for this organization as well as a personal level, because I came up through the sport when cutting was not only the norm but expected, and I was doing 20-plus pound cuts all the time. I see our athletes walking around during fight week, and they are, you know, drinking water, eating food, you know, chewing on pineapple and fruit and stuff and just looking happy. And I'm like, you should be miserable right now, because that's how I was during my fight weeks. But then on top of it, you know, with the rule set, we have our entire judging and scoring criteria, which is different. It's very, I guess you can call it cutting edge. But basically we don't judge the fights on a round by round 10 point must system. We judge them in their entirety. So we look at the fight as basically one big round in essence. It's kind of like, I guess if I could use an analogy, this is the best way I can explain it. Imagine going to a baseball game and watching a baseball game. And let's say that, like, you know, two teams are playing and one team scores a run in the first inning, scores a run in the second inning, and then nobody scores any runs until the ninth inning. And then the other team scores 8 runs in the ninth inning. Well, they would win the game 8-2. But if you're doing this by the 10-point must system, then the other team won 2-1. And that's kind of how fighting is scored here in the U.S. So I'm just I'm a big fan of this other scoring system. I've experienced losses that I felt were not properly judged, particularly the 10-point must system in a 3-round match. I can understand how that would have developed in something like boxing. But no, the way that we judge our matches is that, like, once that first round ends at the 5th minute, when the second round begins at the 6th minute of the fight, it's just that the fight continues from there. So there is no such thing as stealing a round or, oh, I think he stole that round with that takedown. No, you just continue the scoring based on our scoring criteria from that point on. So when you look at the rule system from an entire ecosystem, I think that the judging criteria that we use pushes the athletes to finish the fight. We have a yellow card and red card system that we use that was kind of similar to something like what Pride used. And, you know, you can get yellow carded for anything from a foul to stalling in a match. And so it keeps the action moving. And I think that's part of the reason why we've had like nearly an 80% finish rate in the organization.
You know, what's funny is I got those right here.
Aha, nice.
I bought them the other day because I figured when I start interviewing people, if they say anything that just sucks, I'm going to give them a yellow. And then, you know what I mean? But anyway, of course, I don't think we'll reach that with you. But so did they adopt the global rule set, and that covers everything you just said, the CT scan, the hydration? Colorado's all on board with the one championship global rule set?
Yeah, they are. And so, yeah, everything's been approved. And so, you know, I think Denver is going to be one of the major cities that we're looking at when we come here next year. Our schedule looks, you know, somewhat aggressive. I don't think I can publicly release how many events or any of that kind of stuff that we're planning on doing next year. But yeah, I would look for us to be here on the back half of the year.
Nice. All right. So lots to unpack here. If you want to add to the CT conversation, please do. I think it's super important. The same goes for hydration. Maybe a quick summary there. A lot of people need to understand how important this is, and maybe that would clear up the confusion of why DJ is regarded, I guess. You know, we know him as a flyweight. He's still looked at as a flyweight, but he kind of does the walk around more at bantamweight. And DJ's actually told us I'll never cut to 125 again. He feels great at 135, but I know a lot of people often get confused by the weight class situation. But I did also want to add, you know, Mark Ratner, when he walked the red carpet at the Hall of Fame ceremony that they had for him the other day, he was talking about he wants to – I don't even think it had to do with bringing up one championship. It was just some, you know, his what are his goals and what did he want to do? And he says, you know, this whole thing where I guess when the UFC visits different states and territories, they have – different sets. He wants to get all the commission. This is what I'm trying to say. He wants to get all the commissions on board with the same rules, you know, whether it's two hands down or one hand down or, you know, instant replay or not, things like that. What are your thoughts on that? You know, will Colorado be more of a home base for you guys, just one state, or do you want to take that global set and go to the other states as well that have, you know, big respected commissions?
Okay, so you've asked me about six different things here. We touched on CTs, hydration, Colorado being a home state, commission consistency. Where do you want me to start on all this?
CTs.
Okay, let's start with CTs. Okay, let me back up and actually start with hydration, because I think hydration is important as it applies to CTs. So one of the things that One Championship does in their rule set is we have these hydration tests. Let me use myself as an example. You named DJ, and is exactly what ends up happening is you kind of end up shifting a weight class up. When I was competing at 185 pounds, I would typically walk around somewhere between 205 and 210, which means that I was cutting about somewhere between 20 and 25 pounds. Now, there are athletes that cut more than that and can cut more than that. And I even believe that from a cutting perspective, that the more you cut, the more it weakens you. Obviously, people will ask me all the time, are you stronger at 205 or are you stronger at 185? Well, obviously, I'm stronger at 205, but strength becomes relative because it's relative to your opponent. So the question is, am I stronger than my opponents at 205? Well, the answer in that case is no, because I typically walk around it when I was competing 210, maybe 212 tops. And for example, when I fought Forrest came in that fight weighing over 235. I came in that fight at right around 210. So I'm immediately giving up 25 pounds. So clearly, I'm going to have trouble strength for strength with somebody like that. I will say this, though, that there's a psychology that's been developed in weight cutting where it's like, man, if I can outweigh my opponent by 1 or 2 pounds or 2 or 3 pounds, then I have an advantage. But that's never the case when you're in the gym training. I've never looked at one of my training partners and thought like, I outweigh him by 3 pounds. I'm going to have an advantage in this grappling match right now, because you don't think that way, because you're fully hydrated and you're basically executing at your full potential. And so this is what One Championship's idea was. They said, look, when you dehydrate athletes, they're going to compete in a weakened state. And it's true. So what we want to do is we want to do a hydration protocol. Now, we looked at other hydration protocols, particularly the NCAA had good hydration protocols where they basically have at the beginning of the season, they have their athletes weigh in. They test, they check their weight, test their urine, and see what their urine is for their hydration testing. And basically, we do the same thing. So we use an instrument called a refractometer. And we have our athletes come in, they take a piss test, they get their urine tested with a refractometer. This tests the specific gravity of the urine, getting a little scientific for some of the listeners here. And then that specific gravity, basically what it tests is how much solvent you have in your urine. The more solvents you have in your urine, the more dehydrated you are. And so it tests to make sure you're below a certain amount. If you make that hydration test, great. Then your weight is checked. So you have to be on hydration and on weight simultaneously in our organization. Now, we have had weights that we've had fights that don't make weight. As long as an athlete makes hydration, you're fine. If you miss weight, then a catch weight can be negotiated. And we've had this happen. But even the catch weights have to be within a certain percentage. So somebody can't come in 10 pounds over and say, I missed weight, but I'm hydrated, so let's go ahead and fight, because it wouldn't be within a certain percentage of the upper limit of the weight class. So we do have safeguards against that. But in essence, what this does by testing somebody's weight and hydration simultaneously is it keeps them from doing these big 20-pound cuts. You can't just sit in a sauna like I did and dehydrate yourself. And we'll check the weight and hydration two days before the event. If you miss either weight or hydration on either of those 2 days, because it is possible to be hydrated and not weigh in properly, and it's possible to be on weight, but then you had to dehydrate yourself to get there. So you have to make both of them simultaneously 2 days before the fight and 1 day before the fight. If you miss either one, either day, then you get tested on the day of the event. If you miss weight, a catch weight can be negotiated. If you miss hydration, then you cannot fight. We just don't allow anybody to fight dehydrated. It's as simple as that. if you miss weight and you're hydrated, then we have rules in place where you can, you automatically lose some of your purse and that purse goes to your opponent. So that is kind of how our hydration protocol is handled. And I'm a big believer that every organization in the world should implement this. I believe that it affects the performance level of the athletes, first of all. It's not that I believe it, it just flat out does. Like an athlete cannot perform in a semi-dehydrated state as well as they can in a hydrated state. But on top of that, if you look at the way that the body rehydrates, like one of the last things to rehydrate in the body is the brain cavity. And we're in a sport much like football or anything else where concussions is a big deal here, things like CTE. And so when you look at a dehydrated state of a body and concussions, the effects of a concussion can be amplified when the brain is sitting in a dehydrated brain cavity because the brain is not attached to anything. It just sits in fluid. So if this thing is dehydrated, like if you've dehydrated and in the process of rehydrating, you don't have this back to where it should be, then obviously you're just going to suffer more damage when you're taking hits to the head. So all around, that kind of ties into the whole idea of CT scans and all that kind of stuff as well. And so we've implemented these very strict protocols with CT scans and brain tumors and all this kind of stuff. And our doctor for one championship works with the Association of Ringside Physicians. And so we've implemented these protocols, and they're quite strict, with things like tumors and stuff like that. We've caught a lot of athletes with just different issues where, like, we don't want to put this person in the circle for obvious reasons. And, coupling things like that with the dehydration is a major issue. So, all this stuff is about protecting, obviously keeping athletes as safe as possible. And I believe that the comments from Mark Ratner are the same. Like he wants consistency across the board and to keep things as safe as possible. I think that when you look at our rule set, people are going to automatically zero in on, you can knee to the head to the ground. Like that's not safe. But if you look at everything else that we have going on with our rule set, it's not necessarily the case. And as it pertains to knees to the head on the ground, I would argue, prove to me that you can actually generate more force to the head of a grounded opponent than you can standing. I've been kneed in the head on the ground. I don't know. So go back and watch my Anderson Silva fight, and you can see that not only is his knee coming up, but he's dragging my head into his knee, creating momentum in two directions, generating a lot of force. So I don't see how, for me, I think that if you actually looked at pressure data or something like that, you would find that the impact on either one of those is basically about the same. You're not in any more danger just because you're on the ground. It is a bit shocking to the U.S. audience because they're just not used to seeing it. But when it comes to that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think that a lot of Ratner's comments come down to fighter safety. And that's one of the big pushes that we have in our organization, particularly when it comes to things like hydration and CT scans. And I think that when you look at some of the stuff that's been going on with weigh-ins, I mean, we've seen athletes across the board, like stumbling on scales, falling down, collapsing on stages, right, being rushed to hospitals. That's like, you really have to question how safe that actually is for an athlete.
You know, you're very knowledgeable about all this, but more than anything, you're very passionate about it. I mean, one championship picked the right guy to kind of lead this effort, man. Seriously, yeah. Just listening to you talk about it is getting me to think that, is Andy Foster heard all this? I'm sure he has, right? And Mizzouli and all the big wigs, the different commissions in the states.
Here's the reality. Look at anybody who's sitting on the commission boards right now and all that kind of stuff. How many of these people have actually sat in a sauna for 2.5 to 3 hours cutting weight? How many of these people, like, I can show you a picture of my last weigh-in. Like, I can pull it up on my phone here and put it in front of the camera. And I mean, like, when you look at something like that, let me see if I can find this picture real quick. When you look at a picture of me in my last weigh-in and what I looked like, it's almost scary to sit and think like, wow, like people actually do this to themselves. Like, I don't even know how good this is going to translate onto the screen here, but wow. Like that's me at my last weigh-in. And I mean, my eyes are sunken in, look at my knee bones. Like I look like I'm on death row there.
And you were overseas too for that one, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I lost that match, but I don't think it had anything really to do with my weight cut. But the point is that I've lived both sides of this. I've lived this from the athlete's side. I've done my time. I've cut my weight. I've sat in the saunas. And I can remember cutting weight for my Nate Quarry match. And this is one fight where I forgot my scale at home.
You stopped that one too early, by the way.
What? Yeah, yeah. No, but you know, I left my scale. I accidentally left home, and I left my weigh-in scale at home. So when I was down in the locker room, I was dependent on the scale in the locker room. And you know, I'll say this, like on the back end of this, the reason why rules are set in place is actually to protect the athletes from themselves. Because as a young man, like if you say walk through that brick wall, I'm going to walk through that brick wall, or I'm going to die trying, because that's what I do. At this age, you're like, walk through that brick wall, I'm going to be like, I got a smarter way, man. I got a rope and I'm going to climb over that thing. You know, like you get smarter as you get older. And so this is what happens with testosterone filled young athletes. And so I was sitting in this sauna. I didn't have my scale on me. Unbeknownst to me, the scale at the MGM was broken. I overcut. Like you can go back to that weigh-in, and I weighed in at 183. I mean, you're talking about like 2 pounds is huge, huge. And I'm sitting in this sauna and I'm literally like, I'll kill myself to make weight. And the scale in there was, it was one of those medical detecto scales, you know, the balance scale. And I wasn't dropping weight. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, guys, I don't know what I'm going to do. And it's the first time in my life where I said, I'm done. I'm dry and I have nothing left in me. Like if I sit in here any longer, I'm done. But I can remember sitting in that sauna, and I can't remember who the fighter was, but it was somebody else on the card. And I sat in this sauna for like hour and a half straight. And he looked at me and he was like, Rich, I don't know how you do that. And straight up at the time, I looked at him and I said, that's why I'm champion. And that was the mentality that I had at that point in time. And it's the mentality that you need. It's the mentality that you need if you want to be part of, if you want to be a champion, if you want to be part of an elite forces group in the military, anything like that. Like you have to have that like win or die mentality. And that's why these rules and things like that are set in place. So if this is something that we can eliminate, we're just going to protect the athletes from themselves. And I've been on both sides of this. I've lived this as an executive and I've lived this as an athlete, and seeing both sides of the coin, man, we have a much smarter way of going about these things.
Man, what a great conversation we're having here. We're living some history, you know. Goes in our, 15th year of covering the sport. And as you're talking about a lot of this, it just opens up other questions, but I do want to let Goes get in. I just want to say one thing. I'm not fighter bashing. Nate Quarry has cracked that joke as well before about it ended too early. Goes and I were actually at the MGM for that one. I think that's where it was. Vicious KO. But anyway, all right.
Listen, let me just say this. First of all, I love Nate to death, man. He's an awesome guy, and he's a great fighter too. And it's unfortunate that a highlight like that happens, because it ends up that would be the one highlight that he ends up getting remembered by. And I can remember that highlight being part of my career. And when that happened, I was so excited. Let me tell you, when you get on the other side of those highlights sometimes, and you're the guy that's getting kneed in the face, and that highlight gets shown all the time, then you understand what that means on the flip side of that. And so, you know, anyway, all that to say, man, I love Nate to death.
Yeah, we do as well, man. Zombie apocalypse forever. All right, Goes, why don't you have some questions for Rich? Because I have some follow-ups, but I don't want people to think you're just a mime sitting there on the side.
I'm like a cardboard cutout. Hey, Rich, this might actually be the first time when George asked you those 6 questions. I think you have every right to pull the yellow card on him. He's never pulled it out of himself.
I don't have any yellow cards here, man. So
this one's for me. But let me tell you something. When this is all over, I'm going to go back, because I could have sworn Rich said, Forrest weighed in at 245, I weighed in at 210, I gave up 25 pounds, and I go, wait a minute, I might have to yellow card him, because guess what, folks, his specialty is math. But
I said 235.
Oh, you did? Okay, all right.
Yeah. And if I didn't, then I misspoke, and I don't know if I should be yellow carded for misspeaking. That's like accidentally kicking somebody in the groin rather than flagrantly kicking somebody in the groin. So, you know, but actually in our organization, if you purposely kick somebody in the groin, that warrants a red card, not a yellow card.
True. Yeah. If George is wrong, it might warrant a red card. I might have to finish this by myself. But so Rich, you talked about some of these bad weight cuts that, you know, that you've been a part of, but that you've also witnessed. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, I feel like these weight cuts, your body goes through some kind of trauma. And just because you're able to fight the next day doesn't mean there can't be some lasting effects of what you put your body through. Throughout some of these careers, especially early on, do you feel like some of these fighters later on in their lives may actually feel the repercussions of what they've done to their organs maybe a little later?
Absolutely, 100%. I think that, you know, just on a personal level, I know people that have like competed in bodybuilding shows, particularly women that compete in like figure and bikini and physique, you know, those kind of shows and stuff like that. And women that have gone through extreme weight cuts and those kinds of things. And on the back end, you see a lot of these people that have done this who have wrecked their metabolisms, for example. Now, that's just, you know, obviously, like if you're putting on weight, you have thyroid issues or something like that, those are typically physical manifestations of other problems that you have inside the body. But a lot of things that you can't see until later on in the career that, you'll never see the link to is that if you were cutting weight and you were suffering more severe damage from concussions, from blows to the head or something like that, then this on the back end of life, when you start slurring your speech and slowing down and stuff like that, people are like, oh, well, he got hit a lot. Well, yeah, he did or she did. But she or he also got hit in a dehydrated state or a semi-dehydrated state where it actually increased the severity of the concussion. And that, you know, there's no real way to test this because the human body, everybody's unique. Like everybody's DNA is unique. So I might have a propensity for handling concussions fairly well. Whereas somebody else, they get their first concussion and then suddenly they're shot. They have vertigo and things like that. And they can no longer take hits to the head. And so since everybody's is genetically unique, it would be difficult to compare this kind of data. But I will say that we know that scientifically and biologically, it's not healthy for the human body.
Rich, when you brought up knees to the grounded opponent, we've had this conversation so many times on our show. If that happened here in North America, the landscape, just the history of the sport would be completely changed because there are so many different types of styles brought into MMA that I guess my question to you is there a particular skill set that you feel like would be put in check? Because the first thing I remember is back in Pride, if Mark Coleman didn't complete that takedown and there's a sprawl, you can guarantee a knee is probably going to come right to his head, right? I think it would change the thought process of a lot of fighters. To me, I feel like maybe wrestlers would be the ones that would be the most in check because of that, if you can't complete that takedown. But I could be wrong. What do you think, Rich? Like, what's the particular skill set that you feel like would really be looking out for these?
I agree with you, but I disagree with you at the same time. And the reason why I disagree is, for example, like when I go into the gym on a daily basis, like prepping for a match, for example, I will grapple without punches just to work my grappling. Now, obviously grappling with punches changes the game, but I don't think me spending some time grappling where I'm not punching and just purely working on my jiu-jitsu puts me at any kind of disadvantage for suddenly I'm in the circle or in the cage and I'm grappling on the ground where punches can be thrown at me. I can't do all my grappling that way, but there can be a mix there. So there can be a time where you turn these things on and off. I just think that stylistically people would change in competition. As a wrestler, for example, I'm not the most amazing wrestler. I didn't grow up wrestling. A lot of people think that I grew up wrestling, particularly being from Ohio, because it's a big wrestling state here, but I didn't. And so I had to learn all the wrestling that I know after the fact when I was actually training. And that was a big me swallowing a lot of pride at the time, because I can remember being, purple belt, brown belt in jiu-jitsu and being able to just out grapple people on the mat and then walking into a local college wrestling here and then just suddenly getting mopped by these guys that are just like, because I'm playing by their rules now. And so to go from being like very accomplished in one art to like just like the bottom of the totem pole on somebody else's mat is a very humbling experience. And I had to learn all these skills. And I know other athletes that have been the same way. Like a guy like Matt Brown has constantly reinvented himself during his career as well, good friend of mine. And so, people that can do that, these are the people that end up succeeding. Now, my wrestling style is like NCAA wrestling. Like if I'm going to get on the mat with somebody that's a All-American or, national champion, I'm going to get trashed if I'm trying to wrestle and out wrestle somebody just wrestling for wrestling. But give me a jab. Let me start throwing a jab in somebody's face. And now that kind of puts me on level playing field when I'm wrestling. So, that changes the game. And so I think that when you put something like knees to the head of a grounded opponent, it's just going to change the way that people approach shooting and stuff like that. You don't have to drop to a knee to shoot in MMA like you do in actual wrestling. You can, there are different ways. I'm like my typical entry is like a head inside single. I don't dip down. It typically comes off of my lead hook or something like that because I'm southpaw. And so my style of wrestling has adapted to my striking style. And I don't think I would actually leave myself open to knees to the head on the ground because I just don't wrestle that way. And I think that a lot of wrestlers would end up adapting their style similarly. I mean, this kind of goes across all arts. Boxing, you can't expose the hip in boxing, like if you throw a lead hook, the same way that you could in a boxing match as opposed to an MMA match. So it's just about stylistically changing things.
Rich, two final questions. It'll just be a two-part. One Warrior series, what will be the future of that if you do relocate stateside or stay here more often? And then two, I was told that part of you coming to stateside is you're kind of like a talent scout for One Championship. How much of that, I guess, is true, or, you know, how much are you involved in that?
Okay, so, well, see, now we're getting into, like, my job description, which if you wanted me to give you guys a job description for what I do for One, it would be very difficult to do, which is why I'm not, like, the VP of competition or the VP of whatever, because in this company, I have at one point in time helped build out our online store with our merchandise because I used to own merchandise. I've done some talent scouting with the One Warrior series. I've traveled all over the world looking for talent. I've run a production crew. I'm on this side of the planet actually looking for talent. I'm now working, coordinating with athletic commissions, trying to lay the foundation for our future here. So I don't really know what department in One Championship that actually falls under. I guess, like, much like my MMA career, I'm not the most amazing boxer or kickboxer in the world, but I'm kind of a jack of all trades when you put things together really well. And so I can handle a lot of different things for the company, and I kind of get slated in where I'm needed. As it pertains to One Championship, to answer your question, or not One Championship, but One Warrior Series, I'm not sure when that's going to come back, because if you guys have watched the broadcasts of our recent One Championship shows, we still are doing events with no audience or limited audience. And these are the COVID restrictions that are the COVID protocols, I should say, put on by the Singaporean government. You know, I think our last event, maybe we were allowed to have 500. I'd have to double check that. But point being is that the arenas are still fairly empty. And that's just an example. To travel right now is somewhat of a tricky process. Like, international travel is still a tricky process. Particularly in countries in Southeast Asia and Asia in general. But to be able to travel with an entire production crew, we're probably some time off of that. So as of right now, I don't know what the future of the One Warrior series would be until we can actually get to the point where we're traveling with a production crew, creating the shows again and stuff like that, and doing that talent scouting. So now that I'm here on ground in the U.S., like, basically I'm here and since I'm over here on this side of the planet, it's like, okay, well, what does the company need? Well, we're opening in the U.S. And so we need a foundation laid for a future, which states, which cities are we going to be able to go to, as well as we need to start acquiring, like, talent acquisition on this side of the planet. Now, our head of competition, Matt Hume, is located over here in the U.S. And so obviously I coordinate with him from time to time, but he leads that for the most part. Like, that's his domain. I do help coordinate, like, I've coordinated with local promoters here. For example, I'm working with an organization called Rough Nation out of Arizona, who's running a 16-man heavyweight tournament for us, a Road to One tournament. And so hoping before the end of the year, if this tournament closes out, that we will produce a champion from that tournament that'll end up getting signed to One Championship. But like everybody else, the beginning of the year, there was some issues with COVID and things like that, as well as, you know, this stuff has kind of trickled in throughout the year. Different states have different protocols and whatnot. So, you know, it's obviously laid some difficulties for us, for them to run the tournament for us. But that's just one of the efforts that we have going on here, aside from what, you know, Matt Hume is just purely actually out scouting and looking for guys at various events and stuff like that.
Man, all this is great stuff. We can't wait till the second half of 2022 to see what you guys are going to do here in the United States. Hopefully you guys unveil some of that here with Goz and I on MMA Junkie Radio. And I really can't wait for December for One Championship's 1X card. Mm. Going back to TJ, he's going to be doing some Muay Thai, some MMA, some Muay Thai.
I'll just rewind this. I don't talk as a fan for a second. When One Championship decided to add the Super Series to our events, meaning for the listeners that may be unfamiliar, like, we have Muay Thai matches and we also have kickboxing matches. I wasn't a fan. I was like, this is stupid. I'm an MMA. People that tune into MMA want to watch MMA. You don't turn on a baseball game to suddenly watch a quarter of basketball. That's just not how sports work. And so I wasn't a fan. And then we had our first event and I was like, eh, and I'm still kind of like this, I get like this purist mentality, like, eh, whatever, you know. And then we have a couple events and suddenly I'm like, this is actually really cool. Like, it's nice to have a super grappling match in the middle of an MMA show or a Muay Thai match, particularly our Muay Thai matches, because the Muay Thai matches are done in the 4-ounce MMA style gloves. And so suddenly I start finding myself drawn, particularly these kickboxing matches and these Muay Thai matches, because they're high paced, high action, and you have this variety in the show. And now on the back end, I was like, okay, you were wrong, Rich. Like, this is actually a more exciting event. I think particularly with the TNT events that we had back in April, Broad Tang, for example, put on a great show there. He had a match against Daniel Williams, and it was just – it was a slugfest. And Broad Tang is, like, I believe one of those guys that will be able to somewhat transcend borders and be able to – like, when you watch him fight, he's just that guy. Like, he gets tagged, and he'll be, like, sticking his chin out, like, come on, hit me again. And he's just – he's exciting, man. He's got that X factor about him. And so he gained a lot of fans here in the U.S. On those events. And now, fast forward, him being one of our most exciting Muay Thai athletes, he's going to be taking on DJ. And we came up with this kind of, I don't know if you want to call it a hybrid rules match, but essentially they're doing a 4-round match where first round is Muay Thai, and DJ is going to have to survive that Muay Thai round in order to take Broad Tang into the second round of MMA, and then third round Muay Thai and fourth round MMA. So this is a from somebody who used to be a purist, like, I don't even want to see kickboxing matches on an MMA card to something like this. I'm really excited for this match in particularly.
Yeah, for sure. Tan Lee is fighting Gary Tonin, and they're still building the card out. So
what are your thoughts on that matchup?
Well, you know, Tonin obviously has that, you know how they say, are you a black belt or are you a legit black belt? Obviously, he's a legit black belt.
Yeah.
But a lot of MMA fighters, you know, they work behind the scenes a lot harder than you think. And if you bring in a specialist and you put in a lot of time, you know, and put yourself in difficult situations, especially like, you know, mounted positions, taken in the back. If Tan Lee puts in that type of work, then I think he'll be comfortable. And a lot of times when that jiu-jitsu specialist, which, by the way, I do like Gary Tonin's hands. There are a lot of jiu-jitsu guys that come in and they just don't have much, you know, when it comes to throwing hands. But
I agree.
Who can break the other guy's will in terms of, like, who can thwart the other guy's main attack first and see if they start to break, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll be honest. When Tonin came into the league and I saw his first match, I wasn't really impressed with his hands. And every time I watch him compete, man, he gets better and better, and he's more dangerous on his feet. And I think, like, he's had a couple of matches where he's made it a point, like, no, I'm not going to the ground. I'm going to prove that I can stand up here. I think with this match, the way I see this, like, from the outside is, like, obviously, I mean, Gary Tonin is going to be a way better grappler than Tan Lee. And I believe that Tan Lee has better hands than Gary. And so I think that these two athletes need to come into this match knowing, like, here's my strengths, here's my weaknesses, here's the path of least resistance, and stick to that game plan. Because even though I think that Tan Lee might be able to survive some of Gary's grappling, you know, you need to draw back on your strengths. And if you get arrogant enough to think, like, ah, I can out-grapple this guy, it's like, man, somebody like that, that's Gary Tonin, you know? Like, and you talk about black belt and real black belt. But on the flip side, it's the same thing, man. Like, Tan Lee, his hands are no joke. And so for somebody like Gary, it's like, yeah, he's got some good hands, but, you know, I'm a stick to that path of least resistance kind of guy. I have this whole system of how I used to analyze my opponents.
I remember.
With this matrix and all this stuff. And yeah, so.
I remember asking you once about plan B, plan C, and you told us if plan A isn't working, then plan B and C probably are going to work even less effective. So you tended to stay on track with plan A. I think that's what you're telling us here.
Yeah.
And then another thing, tying in Tonin, if I'm not mistaken, I think Andre Feely brought him in to work for Thug Nasty, Bryce Mitchell, I think is his name, and mm-hmm. and because Mitchell's got really, really good jiu-jitsu. And even though Feely lost, I mean, he got out of some tough positions, and you can just tell when someone puts in the work in their camp. You know, I know obviously, you know, winning's the best, but when you can lose but also show some improvement – like Feely did, you just don't hang your head as low, you know. And I think it was Tonin was the one that he brought in as a specialist, and it worked for him, you know. So Tan Lee's gonna have to find someone that is
on that level. Well, yeah. I think Tan Lee has a history of working with Ryan Hall. I think they've worked together.
There you go.
So I don't know if he's bringing Ryan in for this camp. He should. Like, that's what I would do. I would have been on the phone yesterday. Like, hey, Ryan.
Ryan's one of our teammates, aren't they, over there in New York? Or
come again.
Aren't him and Tonin teammates out in New York?
Yeah, I don't know, because if they are, then if that's the case, then Ryan's got all the intel on Tonin. Like, that's going to backfire on him.
Well, you know, Alan Belcher brought in Dean Lister to fight or to prepare for Husamar Pajares. And if you'll recall, when Pajares went after his legs, Belcher said, like, he already had some defenses. And not only that, he started attacking Husamar Pajares. So he kind of flipped it on him. But again, it's putting in the work, mm-hmm. you know, for these, for some of these specialists. So let's see who kind of does that, I guess. But I'm really looking forward to that fight for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be fun. That's going to be a fun fight as well. So the 1X card is going to be a good card, man. This is our 10-year anniversary, and you know, going back to the rule set and everything, like this is 10 years of us having a really good safety record with our athletes. No major serious injuries or anything like that. And so when you take those kind of things into account, it's like, yeah, one has a lot to celebrate this year.
You know, I did want to end the interview because we took up a lot of your time, and we really are grateful for the 40 plus minutes you've given us. But this was my one follow up when we got sidetracked on. I threw a lot of questions at you. Do you have a rate of how many fights have fallen off because of the hydration? Like, has it stung you guys where cards got depleted, or can you say, hey, look, looking back, 2%, 1%, you guys keep track of that?
I'm pretty sure that this is an accurate statistic still to date, but we've never lost a fight due to hydration. We've had fighters that haven't made weight. We've had to negotiate catch weight fights. And again, we have, systems where you can't weigh more than a certain percentage over the actual weight limit. We've never lost one to hydration. They always come in hydrated, at least hydrated. We've had athletes that have trouble making hydration. You'd be surprised. Like, for example, when you wake up in the morning, your first morning pee, like that first pee that you take in the morning, is the worst one that you can do, because you've like laid all night, and even if you're hydrated at that point in time, like all the solvents are laying there in your bladder and you're releasing all that. So realistically, like just as a technique, like you don't want to use your first morning piss to test your hydration. You want to do your second one to get your system moving. So athletes will make mistakes like that or whatever. They'll, you know, overshoot certain things like, oh, well, I'm hydrated and I can just overeat this week. And suddenly they're coming in like a half a pound over. That's like, but, you know, that's just extra food in the belly or something like that, where they just, you know, got relaxed or whatever. But yeah, we've had athletes that will do that. And so, we've never lost one to hydration to date.
Yeah.
But it is a learning process for our athletes. And I think that the bigger learning process for our athletes is understanding the psychology of that. Just because you're not cutting weight and you're not outweighing your opponent by an extra 2 pounds doesn't mean that you do or don't have an advantage. Like, it's, you know, that this advantage is just in the mind.
Didn't you also once tell us that one of the best ways to burn fat is when you wake up to go for a run without drinking water first?
Well, you're
going to go on an empty, stomach, empty everything.
Well, water's okay. Well, you know, like hydration doesn't change. I'll say this. So this isn't exactly a true statement, but hydration doesn't change metabolism as far as like burning calories. But yeah, I mean, even this morning for myself, like I woke up and I typically do, I'm an empty stomach cardio kind of guy. I like doing that. It keeps me lean. I still look the part. People look at me like, oh man, you look like you're in better shape now than you were when you're competing. I'm like, yeah, because I'm walking around it. I'm not training 25 hours a week. This is, you know, putting my body through 25 physical hours of abuse. When it comes to that kind of stuff, like, yeah, I'm on the mats for grappling and doing my morning cardios and maintaining a healthy level of physical activity in a week. And so, yeah, but that's one of the ways that I do like to stay lean personally. It works for me genetically. My body responds really well to it, and it doesn't even have to be long, but hitting that early morning cardio. That's what I tell people. If you want a weight loss tip for everybody that's listening off topic, if you, best weight loss you could do is you want to keep your metabolism high. There are two ways to do that. When you wake up in the morning, either eat immediately or do some physical activity. If you wake up and sit around all day, then your body's at this metabolic low state, and it'll stay there until you do something with it. So eating is like throwing extra wood on a fire. It just gives the fire something to burn.
Love it, man. Good stuff. I eat right away or go do the cardio. Gotcha.
Yeah. So we've talked about fighter safety and our rules and us coming to the U.S. and weight loss tips. Like, next time I come on, if you guys want me to cure cancer, which I'm working on, we even talked about that. I'm working on with my buddy Cody as he's walking across the country. You know, we'll solve some world problems or something, whatever you have on your agenda.
Nice. All right. I'll tell Tammy, hey, we need 45 minutes with this guy because he's just too interesting. But thank you.
Well, listen, if you had 45 minutes, we'd still be a minute 16 short right now. So we're good.
Well, you were late 2 minutes, though. So
okay. Oh, come on, man. Like, listen.
We're positive 44 seconds.
Who chooses a studio that doesn't work on every web browser? I'm just saying. I'm just saying.
You got to keep you on your toes.
Yeah. Well, you did, but that cost me 2 minutes.
All right, Rich. Thanks so much, man. God bless you, and thanks for the chat. And we really learned a lot, like we always do from you.
Yeah, God bless you guys, man. Always fun being on here. Enjoy the conversations, and hopefully I'll see you all sooner than later.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, you take care, guys.
Wow. Could have talked to him all day, man. That was a good one.
That was a fun one. He talked about a lot of subjects, and you're right, man. There's got to be like a part two to this.
Where do we start? You know, the thing that I was left with the most impressed was his knowledge of the human body and the evolution, I think, of how weight cutting can be improved, how it's being improved and how it can be improved. You know, him, that sauna stuff he was saying, you know, how long he was in saunas. Oh, man, we've dodged some bullets is all I can say over the years. And I'm glad now that it's not as bad. And a lot of fighters kind of fight more at the weights that they should. You know, we don't hear about fighters losing 30 pounds on fight week, 20 pounds on fight week, although we may this week with Costa. But that hydration needs to be looked at more. You know, for a fighter to be the way he explained it, how he sees fighters eating, you know, some pineapple or some fruit, staying hydrated on fight week, and just how pleasant they are to be around, and him reflecting on how miserable it was for him. That's important. That's important coming from a straight shooter, someone who accomplished a lot, someone who had to manipulate his career a little bit between 185 and 205 and feeling the differences between both weight classes. I hope him and Mark Ratner can sit down and talk, and him and Mazzulli from ABC, him and Profato, if he's still with Ohio, him and Andy Foster in California, you know, him and Bennett here in Las Vegas. I think the big chiefs from the major states, they need to hear, I think, a little bit more about this. You know, when someone gives you a presentation, you can usually tell within the first 30 seconds before you go, okay, thank you for your time. Thank you. You know, we appreciate it. But this is one where you could not dismiss Rich Franklin. You know, you would want him to keep talking. I hopefully this starts a conversation.
Yeah, I hope so. It'd be difficult when you think of all the rule sets. I don't know that we're ever going to get to a day where everything's going to be the same. But adding some of the changes that one championship does, as far as weight cutting, I like them. As far as knees to a grounded opponent, I don't know how they're going to take that here in the States. I mean, I don't know that every commission's going to want to adopt it, but it'd be interesting.
Well, going back to DJ's fight, it was kind of gnarly to look at that and go, God damn, you know, when it happened earlier this spring. But DJ was psyched to fight under that rule set. DJ's had no complaints about that KO. And like we covered with Rich and how we've known, there just hasn't really been many serious injuries that we can remember from soccer kicks, heel stomps, knees to a grounded opponent. Maybe we should take it one by one. I'd be more interested to see about the hydration weight cuts. Along with that, they also, you know, talked about the CT scans that they give to their fighters. I think that would be great. I think that's a good look for an organization, for their fighters. And if they come together in conjunction, we're not just talking about saving your kidneys. We're also talking about saving your brain, you know, better performances, possibly. A happy fighter during fight week makes for probably for better fighter buildup, you know, with the media responsibilities that they have. And then on the night that they have to perform, they probably perform even better.
True.
So one by one, let's see how it goes. I really wanted to push him a little bit and say, come on, give us a little bit of a teaser, but I guess we'll, he says second half of 2022, you know, we'll know a lot more about one's position here in the United States, but I don't know. It sounds like they got a lot up their sleeve, an ace up his sleeve.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, we do have to get a part two with Rich Franklin, but we'll save that for another day. Thank you for Tammy from One Championship for setting that up. Goes, this next, the fights that are coming up here, What else are you looking forward to? I mean, I know Vettori and Costa's going to get all the shine. You know me, I've always been a Bruce Leroy guy. He's probably a 500 fighter at this point, but I just always enjoy fighting, watching him fight. He also comes from the 305. He also fought in that same circuit as Dada 5000, Kimbo Slice, George Masvidal. We always call him Ray because that's all we know about him, but Kimbo Slice's protege, Ray. Well, Bruce Leroy was part of that down in Miami. And he's still, man, it's got to be 10 years since his season of The Ultimate Fighter, and he's still hanging in there. But I just kind of always gotten a kick out of this guy, you know. His fights, win or lose, are always fun.
I have a couple fan favorites. Grant Dawson, Jessica Rose Clark. I want to see them go at, you know, have their fights. But honestly, it's top heavy. It really is, this card.
I think Jessica's won 3 straight. Or did I get that wrong? Oh, no. I must be thinking of someone else. I was working on the rankings the other day at 125 pounds, and I was going over some names, and somebody surprised me. They had a little 3-fight streak going. It's not Jessica Rose Clark. She fights Joseline Edwards. Yeah, I love the Ricky Glenn, Grant Dawson fight as well. Alex Caceres fights Seung Woo Choi. Dwight Grant faces Francisco Trinaldo. I can't believe Trinaldo's still around. He's got to be in his 40s. He looks like he's in his 50s. But Masandaruba is still kicking it. He's 43, guys.
That's a lot.
Yeah. You know, sometimes these are the best ones to bet. Karma Worthy is usually good for a highlight. We'll see what he does. Brandon Marcos is still chugging along. All right. I'm in. I'll be watching them. I'll be watching these fights. It's Saturday on ESPN Plus. The fights start at 1 p.m. Eastern, folks. It's an early event. 1 p.m. Eastern so that's 10 a.m. Pacific for the first prelim fights. And there's a total of 14 fights. So this is a morning, early afternoon affair. And luckily, goes, there's no Manchester United. They have Liverpool on Sunday. Let's finish up with that. That should be a big game. What a game today, that comeback against Atalanta in Champions League, down 2-0. Now they won 3-2. But, of course, we were let down by the Dodgers a few minutes ago.
Yeah, that was that one sucked, I'll be honest. But the night before, and then Manchester United, back-to-back, 2 big comebacks. I was hoping for a third, but what are you going to do?
Do they have a chance with 3-1? I mean, I know the easy answer is to say yes, but I guess history tells us that it can be done, even recent history.
Yeah, well, I mean, our manager says it can be done. He's done it multiple times. The team has done it before, so I do think they can do it.
2 last things. I'll make them quick. Fight Island, Dana White says it's going to be hopping again because – on November 8th, I guess it's going to get really strict to get into the United States. According to the United States government, you need a vaccine and that test, unless you have some sort of a exemption. He says it's going to be hopping in the UAE, meaning that's where Abu Dhabi is. It's one of the United Arab Emirates. However, I kind of keep up with world news, and they actually have done very well on their front in terms of combating COVID. It's not over by any means, but one of their regulations is a lot of foreigners who travel there have to almost have the same thing going on. So what's going to be so hopping over there that's not going to be hopping over here?
I really don't know. I guess he's flying there Wednesday, and he has a bunch of meetings, supposedly. But it seems like there's more to that story than just, you know, what's going on with COVID and all that. So we'll see what his announcements are.
And the last one is, you said there was an update. Was there a second version of what happened with Connor and the DJ? It still doesn't in any way make Connor look any better, but clarify for me again what you may have read.
Well, no, early on, I guess the way it was told was they said, let's go to another party.
Connor says that.
Huh?
Connor says that. The DJ goes, okay. And then according to the DJ, he gets socked, right?
Right. But I think the way the story actually went and what's been reported now is that the DJ was trying to leave Connor's party. And that's when he got socked. I'm not saying, now, you know, he looks a lot better.
Oh, now we did it.
But seriously, one of them is, as ridiculous as both of those are, one of them is a lot better than the other, right?
Not think a about lot better. It's just a little better. If you tell someone, hey man, I got to get going, I'm leaving your party. You don't deserve to get socked for that.
You don't. But you can understand somebody's emotion. Like if I told you somebody's leaving your party, you might go, ah, that sucks, right? Like you can understand that emotion.
Yeah, let me at him. I want to sock him. I mean,
right. That's going too far. But you can understand that, right? Tell me where on earth you would understand the emotion of, hey, you want to go to another party? Yeah. Okay. Boom. That made zero sense. That's like right. Looney Tunes. You're on another planet. At least the other one, you're just an asshole.
I think, like I said, I think it's just better, but it's not a lot. You said it was a lot better. Like you made it.
Sound it's
like,
a lot better.
Clarifies things, you know.
No. I'm because one of them just makes zero sense. The other one, he's just an asshole. Okay, I get that. It still doesn't make much sense, but he's an asshole. There's an explanation. The other one's like, bro, that makes no sense. If I'm in your circle, anytime you ask me a question, I could get lit up. Like, why the fuck would I be your friend? You know, hey, you want to go to a restaurant? I don't know. Cover up. I mean, I don't know.
I'm thinking of that junkie gathering at the hotel. Every time somebody left the party, can you imagine we told Big Ben Rothwell, hey, man, go tune that guy up. He's leaving. Mm-hmm. And he goes up there and gives him a Nelson Muntz punch right in the belly. Oh, and that guy has to get in the elevator, just push a button and ride all the way down, trying to catch his breath. He's trying to leave because he doesn't want to get hit with another one. And he can't figure out why. The guy showed up with a bottle. He had fun. He sang on the karaoke machine. He did shots, you know. And all he did was say, hey, man, looked at his watch. I got to get going, bro. It's like 3 a.m. Oh, yeah? Boom.
Mm. This one's an overreaction, you know, like what? My party's not good enough for you? Or, you know, who knows? I could only let 10 people in, but I let you in, and now you're leaving after 5 minutes? Like, it's just an overreaction, as where the other one is a complete ridiculous scenario. So I do think one is way better than the other.
Okay, we'll agree to disagree. I just have a problem with that word way. It's not way better. It's just better, but it ain't way better. Way better almost implies like, oh, now it's been clarified. Now
it does.
Now I'm even leaning on Connor's side. There's no way we're even leaning towards Connor's side of any of this.
We're not. But at least you know, okay, oh, he's just being an asshole. He's being stupid. The other one, you're going, what? That makes zero sense for anyone to do.
Okay. All right. Well, because we went for a while with Rich Franklin, we better cut it short because this is a long episode. Hopefully you all enjoyed it. And, of course, we will be watching the fights on Saturday. Remember, it's an early affair, and MMA Junkie has got you covered. Follow us on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes. And we will be talking to you Sunday night for early Monday delivery. Thank you again, everybody, for all those kind messages over the past few months. We really, really mean it. It warms our heart. All right, we're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.